Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Feed Your Head. And we're giving you more than just the laundry and the oil change to think about. Tonight, we have Ariel Monterey and also Eileen Fleming in the second half hour. So let's just get going. Hello, Ariel.
Hi.
It's so good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm going to be talking tonight about alternative health and some very easy and expensive things that you can do to improve your health, have more energy, and they're totally natural. There's no bad side effects.
Right. I mean, you can't, this is not something that, oh, gee, I wonder if I'm going to overdose, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And,
right.
I mean, this is what has gotten us into the stage that we're in as far as health. I mean, just not thinking for ourselves and letting these companies do what they've done.
Yeah.
And so I like I said, you're not a doctor. You've done extensive research, though. I know before, but particularly since you have moved, I guess it's okay to say where you live, the state.
You came
from the West Coast to Tennessee.
Yes, I did.
And since you've lived here in the different area, you've seen an awful lot of chemtrails, right?
Oh, yes.
And I think that this has something to do with getting you started in some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was part of it. And again, I'm not a licensed healthcare practitioner, all right? So I'm not, you know, I'm not telling you go out and do this immediately. What I'm doing is giving you some information that's going to be about nutrition, really, because doctors don't tell us about that.
Well, they don't study it.
No. And what happened to me was that 25 years ago, when I was about 32, prime of my life, I began to feel really, really fatigued all the time. I'd wake up in the morning and not be, you know, it's like I hadn't slept. And so I went from doctor to doctor to doctor. Oh, and pretty soon, quickly, it developed into I'd get up in the morning, put my feet on the floor and fall down because for some reason the muscles on the bottom of my feet weren't working, you know, and total pain throughout my body and everything else. So I went from doctor to doctor to doctor, and I was living in San Francisco, Bay Area at the time, and there's a lot of good doctors there. You know, they come from Stanford or, you know, other really good places. Nobody could tell me what was wrong, and they'd put me, and I had health insurance, they'd put me through all these tests and never find out. And they never
That was
did.
Scary. That was
yes.
scary.
Well, one even suggested I might have MS, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was scary. I was barely able to work, and I had just, you know, this went on for years and years and years where I was so sick. I had candidiasis throughout my entire body. My stomach was permanently distended from it. And some days I couldn't get out of bed, you know, except to go to the bathroom and crawl into the kitchen for something.
Yeah.
This went on for, I don't know, about 6 years, I guess.
Oh.
It was horrible. It was a nightmare. It was hell. And I this is before the internet, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started going to health food stores and trying to find books about, you know, what the hell's wrong with me. And my boyfriend at the time said, you know, maybe it's your thyroid. So I just started there, and I got an excellent book, by the way. Anybody who has any kind of thyroid problem, I can't remember the name of it, but thyroid is in it. But it's by a doctor who's now dead called Broda Barnes, Broda Barnes. And in it, it told me, take your basal temperature every morning. So I started doing that, and lo and behold, it was way below what it should have been. And so that was the first clue that maybe it was the thyroid. So I kept on doing my research, and I poured all my money into acupuncture and books and, you know, I was making good money, but, you know, that's where
but
it all
still,
went.
Still,
yeah. So anyway, finally, I got that part of it figured out, and I managed to get an endocrinologist put me on Synthroid, which is the synthetic thyroid hormone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the time, but that doesn't work nearly as well as natural desiccated thyroid, which they get from pigs, because pigs are very similar to humans in a lot of ways. And anyway, the long story short, because Synthroid didn't work, I suffered for many more years, and finally I started on the internet, I came out, and I started to find tons of information, and then I knew it was my thyroid, absolutely knew. And I have a history of low thyroid. Every single member on both sides of my family has it.
Well,
and I was adopted. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that till later. So anyhow, then I had to fight to get the medication. And what happened was, the tests that they do for thyroid are graded on the curve. And because there's a hell of a lot of people suffering from low thyroid in America today, it lowers the curve.
Sure.
And so I was kept coming out normal, low in the low range of normal. I can't tell you how many doctors I went to. Nobody seemed interested in finding out what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
And I began to get completely discouraged. And what I now know about the medical community is that a little over 100 years ago, John Rockefeller, the original one, decided he was going to get all medical care under his umbrella. And that's where he started. He opened up the first med school. You know, the licensing became very stringent. It went on and on and on. And it's still doing it. It's still being run by some members of the Rockefeller family. And
Well, the doctors are taught to prescribe. They're not taught to really heal. I mean, many of them are.
No.
So.
They get all their information at this point about treatment. They get it all from the big pharma.
Exactly. People that, I mean, anyone with any sense wouldn't trust, but
right.
There you have it.
So then I went to my doctor. I was with Kaiser at the time. And what I did was, the next thing I did was I ordered natural desiccated thyroid from a place in Europe, because you don't need a prescription there.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. My life started changing around.
Mm.
Yep. And from that day forward, I have continued to get better, but I'm still not completely well. And this is like 12 years ago.
Mm.
You know, and I've had to, all the things I found out, I have to do my own. Anyway, so I went to the doctor and told him I'd been on this thyroid for a couple of years. It was working fine. He wanted a phone number and address. I said, oh, sorry, he's dead. That was the only way that I was able to finally get medication for a thyroid. So I still wasn't feeling terrific, and I now know, I read this in a book called Iodine, Why You Need It, What It Does and Why You Need It by Dr. Brownstein. I highly recommend that book for everybody. And something like, you know, he tests iodine levels in all of his patients, because he finally began to suspect people weren't getting enough iodine and they weren't healthy because of it. And he found that like something like 95% of the people in his clinic weren't getting near enough iodine, and I wasn't. So I started on the iodine. And it is, the lack of iodine has been called by the United Nations, the WHO, has been cited as the number one cause of mental retardation in children that are born, you know, from the get-go. And it affects your intellect. Kids get retarded.
Well, a lot of very micronutrients do, trace minerals, all of these things. And it is hard, admittedly, to get it in food. Of course, if people insist on eating junk, I mean, prepared foods and things from the center of the supermarket, you're going to continue with health problems. You need to eat the perimeter. And, you know, as much organic as you can afford or grow or whatever.
Yeah.
And I know you garden.
Oh, yeah.
Did you always, or is this a relatively new thing?
Oh,
gardening.
Yeah, that's a big mad passion for me. But, you know, even if you live in an apartment, you can grow spinach in a little window box under a grow light. You can grow lettuce. You can grow onions. You can, you know, green onions. You can grow herbs, all kinds of stuff. Anyway, so That's iodine, and this doctor recommends minimum 12.5 milligrams.
Now, some people will get their iodine. In fact, they probably get too much because they use too much salt, and they use salt that has iodine added. So that's something to consider if you're a salt eater.
Table salt is poison.
Of course. We know this. Yeah,
I read the label. And my husband, who's a biologist and knows a lot of chemistry, looked at it and said, what the fuck are they putting this in here for?
Yeah.
Sorry for the language, but I mean, this is
a hot
topic.
That's okay. We're mature. So.
Well, I'm very mature, yes. In age, I don't know about mentally.
well, we're mature on the show. We're considered mature. Yes, I checked that box.
Yes.
So we can say words, yes.
Anyhow, he recommends a minimum of 12.5 milligrams of iodine per day. And you can get that in pill form. You can, and you can take more than that. I take 20 per day. It's the average iodine intake of a Japanese person.
Hmm.
So, anyway.
Well, and that would be probably before they started eating more westernized foods, because they used to eat... Mm-hmm. A lot of seaweed and things,
right,
which is a very good source of iodine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't happen to like some seaweed because it's too fishy, and I'm vegan, and it just makes me ill. I like dulse. Dulse is my mine.
But the problem with seaweed these days is mercury poisoning, radiation.
Exactly, where is it coming from? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, it's a vicious circle, because everything that we get has been possibly touched. I mean, if you haven't chemtrailed it, I just read that right now in our country the radiation levels are up. And that's not all because of Fukushima, but it's because we've got some problems here that people won't address. And then Obama signs the law to build some more nuclear reactors.
Mm-hmm.
Two more. You know, so this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Things that any thinking person really needs to get on the ball.
That's real true. And I'm going to tell you some ways to protect yourself from the Fukushima and other radiation. Guess what? Iodine.
Yeah, iodine's one of them. Yeah.
SSKI, what's that, hon? Okay, potassium iodide. That is the thing that's most effective.
Right. But let me ask you. He's right there. You can ask him. I've read that you do not want to just take that all the time, thinking that there might be something coming.
Throw that out. I don't know. You know, you could have read it in a book or the internet. There's a hell of a lot of bad information out there.
Exactly.
And this is why when I do my research, I do research several hours every single day. And when I do, I look at as many different websites as I can find about one fact to see what most of the majority say and who explains it and all of that.
Right.
So, the iodide, potassium iodide, you can Google that online, and you take that, and that will help protect your thyroid, because that's the first place that the radiation goes to and destroys your thyroid.
Right.
And if you take that, it will bypass the thyroid and help you dump out all the radiation. The other thing it does, and I'm seeing this just now starting to surface, and Dr. Brownstein says this in his book about iodine, breast cancer, many, many forms of breast cancer are caused by a lack of iodine. So if you have breast cancer, start taking your iodine, because it's the breast and the thyroid is what the iodine protects. But it also, every single cell in your body uses iodine, so you really need it. And they're telling us we need, 100 micrograms, which is about 1,000 times too little. That's nothing. It wouldn't keep a flea alive. Anyway, that's iodine. And if you've got thyroid problems, iodine will help greatly with that as well. The next thing I want to talk about is magnesium. And by the way, I've read a number of places that most Americans are deficient in at least one nutrient.
I would think that's quite an understatement.
I think so.
Yeah.
I definitely. And I happen to think that all disease is caused from lack of nutrients or an imbalance of nutrients.
Well, I agree. Mm-hmm. Stand it out.
Yeah. And my husband has diabetes, so I'm doing research there and finding what helps with that. And one of the things, oh, what is that called? Rooibos, R-O-O-I-B-U-S. They use it in Jamaica for diabetes, and it helps to control them. There's something in it, a nutrient, you know, that works.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, magnesium, a lot of people are deficient in magnesium. They're now starting to think that that's what's causing horrendous PMS in women, and I certainly have that problem. And it relaxes your muscles.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a cramp or something, it's really good for that. If you have arthritis, it's excellent for that. I have a back injury with arthritis and everything else. I put it right on my back. I do liquid form. Forget doing pills. In order to absorb the amount you need to get, you would have to give yourself one horrendous stomach ache. So I do it on the skin, okay? You can get magnesium chloride is the form we use. There's different forms. Magnesium chloride is what we use, and we get it in crystal form, and the cheapest place to get it is your aquarium shop. You know, it'll cost you a couple of bucks, and then you've got enough for the whole year. So for something like, you know, 10 bucks or something, you're set for the whole year, and I use it every single day. You add enough water, just enough water, so that you've got a liquid. And it will look like just like water, but it will feel very weird, almost oily, but it isn't oily.
Mm.
And about one or two teaspoons a day of that, and you're good to go. I used it on my horse when he injured his leg, and he would stop limping within like 3 minutes, you know? It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a miracle thing.
Right. So now you're saying that you put that on,
mm-hmm.
but if somebody doesn't have pain or anything, they should still just... You would say just still rub it on the skin?
Yeah, it's...
You wouldn't want to mix it with the water and drink it. Is that what you're saying?
No, you don't want to drink it.
Okay.
You don't want to drink it. And putting it in the bathtub is just sort of pretty much a waste of it, you know.
Because right, I can see that.
So much.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing that they have in Epsom salts. And whenever you have sore muscles, they tell you to take an Epsom salt bath. But this is more
mm-hmm.
powerful because it's, you know, stronger solution.
Right.
And, so, anyway, magnesium, if you've got arthritis or injuries or anything like that, it's really good at helping to heal soft tissue injuries as well. And if you don't have, if you're still pretty young and you don't have pain in your body, probably one teaspoon a day would be just fine. And I
just to, you know, just rub on somewhere.
Yeah. And if you do drink it, it causes serious diarrhea. And that leads to other problems. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one that I want to talk about is vitamin C. And probably most people know that Linus Pauling, every single day, took 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C. And he lived to be like 96 years old, didn't have cancer, you know, was never sick. And so I found, in order to take enough of vitamin C to make a difference, you'd have a horrible stomach ache if you were using capsules. So I found a product. It's called Sea Salts. And it's in powdered form. You mix it with juice so it doesn't taste bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I do about 10,000 per day. And that's Wholesale Nutrition is the name of it. And it's Nutra, NUTRI.com. And I'm not getting money from anybody for any of these.
Right.
These are just,
right.
This is what
yeah.
I happen to find, okay? That will help to prevent cancer and a multitude of other things. We don't make vitamin C in our body, and so we need
to take... Well, he also said, he told people that to find how much they needed was to take it, because, you know, tea is water-soluble. You're going to pee it out what you don't use,
mm-hmm.
so you need to take it throughout the day.
Right.
And he said, take it up to the time when you start to get diarrhea and then back off a tiny bit, and then
mm-hmm.
you found your optimum amount of C.
Yeah.
Was what he had said years ago. I don't know if that really holds now, but that was years ago.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't come across that, but, you know, if you do like 2,000 milligrams like five times a day, you'll probably be just fine and do
yeah.
it with food, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, vitamin D3 is another important one. And again, with the chemtrails, the sun's being blocked out, so we're not getting as much sun as we should. And I noticed it this summer because I'm out in the garden all summer, and I wasn't getting tanned like I normally do. The sun was a lot weaker because of the cloud cover. And so vitamin D3 is extremely important, and somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 milligrams a day if you're taking a capsule. Because, again, if you take anything by mouth, your body's not going to absorb all of it.
Right.
It depends on the substance you're taking. It could be your body only gets 10% of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some other things maybe 50%. But
right, and it depends on the, even whether it's a gel, a capsule, a tablet, all of those things make a difference.
Yeah, I will frequently, okay, B12. They outlawed B12 shots now. And I'm an older person, so I need B12. I'm also a vegetarian, and we all need B12. And I found it in gel form, and so I prick it with a pin, and I put it on my skin and rub it in, and that seems to be working just fine. So I think things are probably, most things are far more productive if you put them on your skin topically.
Yeah.
Now, another thing I found, okay, depression. What I found is 100 grams per day of biotin will greatly help with that. It is the mood builder, and we all need biotin. It's also good for our hair and skin, too.
Right. Well, if you're taking a good B complex, you're going to get that in it. And
no, you're not. Because,
really?
Yeah, exactly. Because biotin doesn't absorb into your body.
Well, again,
there's not enough.
It wouldn't be in the liquid form or something. This is true.
There's not enough in those multiple vitamins. There's not enough. Even if you take two, there's not enough. And there's a type of biotin that is far more readily available, and I cannot think of the name right now. But I found out about it in a terrific book called The Drug Muggers, written by a pharmacist. And she goes through and tells you, she lists all of the different big pharma drugs that everybody takes, and she tells you what they leach out of your system in the way of nutrients, which is a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot, yeah. But I highly recommend that book because she goes through and she tells you, here's all the nutrients that you need. Here's the ones that I use that I have found to be the best. And she explains what they do and how they work and all of that. And so that's, I think, another must-have book, especially if you're taking any big pharma drugs, you know, if you're diabetic or whatever.
Or if you're just, I have a friend who leans toward the hypochondriac area and just loves taking whatever that she can get from the doctor. And I keep saying, you know, you need to offset that. And also she eats junk. So, you know, she doesn't want to hear that if she changes her eating habits, 90% of her problems are going to go away within probably 30 days. But she doesn't want to do that. She wants to eat the crap and take pills, a pill for this and a pill for that and a pill to counteract what that pill did.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, by the time, it's just, and you wonder why your body gives up.
Yeah.
It's getting all these mixed messages.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you expect it to do? It's just going to collapse sooner or later. And so much of what we have now is caused from inflammation. And eating well will help get rid of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's no way around that. You know, it's like an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic and, you know, you just need to quit drinking if you want your life to work. Yeah. Otherwise, you suffer the consequences. It's just that simple. There's no way around it. Anyway, biotin, okay. One thing I want to say, it's really important that you get the right balance between all of these vitamins and supplements. So if you're doing magnesium, you should also be doing calcium. And all this information is out on the internet in this book. The Drug Muggers, I highly recommend. One common thing, of course, is cancer. Everybody's getting cancer. And as long as I've been alive, it continues to get worse and worse and worse. And, we're still looking for a cure. Let me tell you, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry. They are not about to find a cure. And I got that from people that actually worked at National Institutes of Health and CDC and things like that.
This is true, because, and that's mm-hmm. where people have got to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. Many people, by eating right, have cured all kinds of things. And like you're saying, take some supplements in addition, and, mm-hmm. you know, don't listen to these companies. The studies that are done that show this and this are by the companies that are, you know, they're funding, like Big Pharma mm-hmm. funds a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can say, oh, well, you know, the drug company says this, or the government says this, or they, you know, it's all bull. I believe it's by the year, is it 2015 or 2016? Maybe mm-hmm. it's 2020, no later than 2020. They're saying that one out of two diseases and illnesses in this country will be cancer. And they're just counting on that. But, you know, you don't have to be one of them.
No, you don't. You don't, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some real simple things to do to cure cancer.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not
going
to stand here and tell you that if you do these things, every single form of cancer will be cured, because that's not true. It's just too virulent with some people. But what I can tell you is that I have a couple that are very good friends of ours. He's into health, like we are, and I've learned a lot from him as well. His wife got breast cancer about 5 or 6 years ago, and she was going through chemo. She came home, and she looked at him and said, I think I'd rather die than have to go through another one of these sessions again.
Yeah.
And the story he tells is, when I went in there for her chemo treatment, like the second time or something, I noticed the nurse putting on gloves and everything, and I asked her why. And she's like, are you kidding me? If I had this stuff got on my hands, it'd burn the hell out of them. And he's just like, why? Why would you ever put that in a human being's veins then?
Yeah.
And they got up and left. He went home, he started doing research. They both went on a raw food diet for a year, cured her breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? They didn't know about iodine yet.
Yeah.
She got off the diet, the breast cancer came back, they went back on the diet, and they still are, and she's been cancer-free for over 5 years now.
Yeah. And it's not just cancer. Other eating well can also prevent a lot of unnecessary surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
And just before we came on the air, I saw one of the people on one of the groups I'm on, he's a coach. There's mm-hmm. a lot of nutritional coaches around. And he's vegan, and he had a little note from somebody that he had talked to recently. And she said, you know, you told me to keep in touch and let you know what's happening. And she's 20. She'd been diagnosed with kidney stones. I mean, she was in so much pain that she was afraid, like, money-wise, she would lose her apartment, and she'd have to drop out of school and all these things. And the doctor had, said, well, okay, you know, surgery, and she was, okay, it's going to be surgery. Well, she went on raw food,
mm-hmm.
and she saw the doctor that it was either yesterday or today. I mean, really recent. She went in because the doctor, you know, they were making plans for the surgery, and he wanted to take last-minute x-rays,
mm-hmm.
and he did. He left. He came back in, and she said he was just awestruck. He said, what kind of medications have you been taking?
Mm-hmm.
And she told him what she was doing, and the kidney stones were down to 1/16 the size.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went and looked up when she told him what she was eating. It turns out she's been using like 10 lemons a day with mm-hmm. her raw food,
mm-hmm.
and the lemons had dissolved the kidney stones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
the acid in the lemons.
It totally changed her whole life.
Because
she doesn't have to have the surgery. She's still in school. Everything is working, and she's a convert because
mm-hmm.
she saw what it did. You know, it's sometimes it has to come down to something so serious that they're going to take the knife and, you know, you say, whoa, or like the chemo. It's like, okay, you're putting that poison in my veins.
There are a number of ways to treat cancer and some of these other things. Kidney stones is another one. Malic acid, which is found in apples, will work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, cranberries have malic acid. Also, I live on some acreage here up in the mountains. We don't mow our lawn. Why? Because tons and tons of wild herbs grow here freely, and they're wildcrafted. And so I make sure I leave some for next year, but I go and gather. And I have goldenrod, tons of it. goldenrod mm-hmm. will help dissolve kidney stones. This is all free. You know, you can probably find goldenrod out in the park or on the side of the road somewhere. It's free, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, another thing I have here that's really important that grows here wild is sheep sorrel. And if you've ever heard of the herbal mixture called Essiac, which is used to melt cancerous tumors, that's one of the four herbs that they use in there. And they use it because sheep sorrel, that's really the most active one, sheep sorrel melts tumors.
Mm.
Yep. Another thing that works for cancer is what they call a graviola tree. And here in the south in Tennessee, it's called a pawpaw tree. We have over 100 trees, 100, we have over 100 pawpaw trees in our woods. We're set, you know. And I think it's the leaf from that you eat. But you can find all this on the internet. If you Google like graviola, G-R-A-V-I-O-L-A, plus how to use or some such, it's all over the internet. There's an excellent, excellent website called Cancer Tutor, cancertutor.com, T-U-T-O-R, and they have people that have recovered from cancer. They'll take you by the hand and show you all the ropes, what you need to know, etc. It's got, you know, tons of different cures, what worked for somebody with one particular kind of cancer. It's a really terrific website.
Wow.
And finally, baking soda.
Mm.
Cancer feeds on sugar. Now, if you're a person that never eats sugar, you may well never get cancer. It loves sugar, and Americans consume sugar like it's going out of style.
The average is 22 teaspoons a day.
That's just ungodly, isn't it? No wonder
it is, because it's in things, because people buy pre-made, pre-packaged goods that use it. We're not saying that you put that much in your food at the table, because most people don't. But they get that much, and that's totally unacceptable. Yeah, it's a complete non-natural food.
It's
taken from
sugar. Sugar is natural, but the way
they do it, it's not natural by the time you get it. I mean, if you just chew on cane, or you go eat a sugar beet, that's different from what you get in the package. It's very much different, because when you're eating it straight from the field, you're getting everything else that's with it. It hasn't been extracted.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different product.
What happens with cancer, one of the things is the acid-alkaline balance in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. Cancer thrives in alkaline or acid?
No, in acid.
An acid in an overly acidic body.
You want to keep your body alkaline.
Right,
yeah.
And so that's why you take baking soda. And again, that's on Google. Google cancer plus baking soda. Now, you're also going to get a whole lot of papers, articles that poo-poo it and denounce it and debunk it. But it works.
Well, here's the question. Because it has some type of salt in baking soda, sometimes sodium. So is that the kind that is bad for you?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear there was an interference.
It has
there.
Sodium or salt in baking soda. And so that's why I would be very leery. That's what I'm asking. Is it the like the bad kind? You know, I have to do. I brush my teeth with baking soda. I can taste the salt. So I'm not about to drink it, but this is why I'm asking. How much, you know, because
baking soda is perfectly safe to drink, and people use it for like heartburn and stuff like that. They've done that.
Well, I know they do that,
but if they have heartburn, they already have food issues.
Question is, how is it safe because it has so much sodium in it? I mean, you can look on the box. I did that once, and I was amazed at the amount of sodium in it, because somebody said, well, you should just drink some in a glass. And I looked at that. I mean, that's more. I don't eat salt. And that's more than I would get. I mean, I get my salt from my vegetables.
There are different types of sodium.
That's what I'm asking about,
And the if you're dying of cancer, let me put it this way.
Well, sure. I mean,
if I'm dying of cancer, I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to have the baking soda, regardless.
If you're not, I mean, I'm just asking for somebody, because I know people who do. They just drink some every morning.
Well, it's not. It's not good. It's got. It's really not something you want to do all the time. That's a whole other issue because what it does is it destroys all the acid in your body, in your stomach, and then you can't digest your food, so you're not getting all your nutrients,
right.
And you can get leaky gut, and you can get a lot of other complicated problems.
But
and
no, he's saying for cancer, for a specific disease or ailment, oh, sure. I mean, I totally agree, and it doesn't get any cheaper than baking soda. Baking soda is a wonder, just like vinegar is. I mean, you clean with them, you wash your hair with them, you cook with them, you drink them. It's just, some of the best things are the most inexpensive, actually.
Yeah, and that was developed by an MD in Italy, where they're far more adventurous about natural cures than they are in America.
Well,
and
they
another
don't have
thing
big
I want to
farms.
Say about
big
cancer,
farms are so
the whole cancer, there's a huge, this huge cancer industry. Mm. And they're telling the doctors that chemo will be the and radiation are the only things that are going to cure you from cancer. But they don't. They make it worse. And it is illegal, and to me, this says it all. It is illegal for an MD to even inform you of the fact that there are other cancer treatments out there, and they cannot treat you they cannot treat you using those methods. It's illegal.
Yeah, isn't that? I mean, I do feel sorry for doctors now that are their hands are tied that way. When I had some issues, and these were not anything brought about by eating wrong, because my doctors were thrilled with what I eat. But it was caused from an accident, and I had to have some surgeries. And I talked with them about alternative things, and they were right with me, encouraging me. But they didn't know a lot because they hadn't studied.
Okay,
but they
in my
knew
view,
that they worked.
In my view, doctors really don't know anything when it comes to healing anybody.
No.
Perhaps a bit lopsided, but remember, I've been on the receiving end of some very, I mean, this is malpractice stuff that we're talking about. They missed hypothyroidism in me for 25 damn years.
That's it. I mean, they are taught, and then they're, it's reiterated by the big farm salesmen that come around giving them samples.
Right. And the number one cause of death in America, you know what the number one cause of death in America is right now?
What?
Iatrogenic causes. That means doctor treated.
Yeah,
people die from doctor's
treatment. Well, you know, in the old days, you used to, well, I mean, I would read stories about the old days when people just, they always fought going to the hospital because once somebody got in the hospital, they died.
Yeah.
Pretty much it was, you know, and so now it's that way, or you catch some other disease or something. I mean, I've been very fortunate, and I have been so fortunate with the doctors I've had for what the issues were and the surgeons and everything. I mean, I have been blessed. Most people I know haven't been. Mm-hmm. And so I just consider myself so fortunate. I cannot knock my doctors. They've been wonderful, wonderful men. And
there's a few good ones out there. I have not met one yet, but they're out there, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but they are the pioneers. They're the rebels.
And well, you know, and the funny thing is, my three top doctors, none of them are from here, from this country. How's that? Okay, then. That's just because of the way it is. Years and years ago when I was out west and I had a laparoscopic sterilization, my doctor was from Tennessee, and he was wonderful. So I have to admit that, I have had, and when I was a kid. But
and in Tennessee, that's
latest,
interesting.
But he was in Idaho, you know. But,
Anyway, to me, that one statement, that one fact, that doctors are not allowed to treat you any other way except approved, you know, one way, basically, chemo.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
try the hell out of the person. That speaks volumes. It tells me all that we need to know, which is that the medical community is actually working against us being healthy. And there are very little nutrients, as you say, left in our food. The soil is worn out from years and years and years of really bad farming practices. Now, we knew this over 100 years ago. We knew this, but we lived that way for a long time. But after World War II, pesticides were introduced. I mean, everybody used to farm organically. Pesticides were introduced, and it look at where we're at now. We're losing all of our pollinators.
Yeah.
You know, I go out
and Monsanto just bought the firm in Europe and had come to the conclusion that it was Monsanto's products that were killing the bees. So they bought the laboratory, the research firm.
Yeah, I read
that.
So that
tells you something right there. You've got to be diligent. If you can raise bees, raise them. You know, whatever you can do, and we still have a lot of good land left where things can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
people who even have land that's not so great, it can be amended. And then you want to rotate the crops and do, I mean, there's so much that we can do. And
mm-hmm.
I don't want people to think, you know, that they're just, that they should give up. We have friends who live in the cities who are running community gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how well those are doing and how much people want to be part of it. You know, anytime you can give, I just read some people are going to give seeds to kids. For Halloween treats, or seed balls or something with little instructions.
Cool, very
because,
cool.
I mean, how nice. Kids like to grow things. I mean, there's something about it. You know, playing in the dirt, and then you see the plants come up, and wow, we can eat it too.
Well, there's a huge grassroots movement of people that are trying to do local food, and they go shop with their local farmers, or they grow it themselves. People are getting back into gardening enormously.
Yes.
And I have discovered through my own hard-earned experience, the only decent way to grow a vegetable garden is to have both manure and compost and nothing else. And if you buy those two things from a store, from a nursery, make very damn sure that they're not made by Big Ag. What you want is something from a local farmer.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to, it's sludge. It will destroy your entire garden virtually forever because they put sludge in it. And I found that out the hard way. I had to break ground for a new garden this year because it destroyed my garden. So, you know.
See, because you think you're doing the right things. You think you can go to this company and trust it. Well, no, you can't. And you mentioned compost. Yes, you can buy compost, but also make sure you compost your own things. You know, at this point in time, there's no good excuse for having very much for the actual garbage collectors.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we buy properly and do recycle and then also compost, we're not going to have a lot left to hit the landfill. So that's all good. Your plants love having their dead buddies, you know, put in the dirt. I mean, really. From coffee grounds, tea grounds, all of this.
Yeah.
You know, just compost it up.
Oh, yeah. You can compost paper towels, napkins, toilet paper, human waste, old clothes, old t-shirts.
Now, the human waste is a little, because I know people who have like the EcoArc, and they do that, but it has to go through a little bit more, actually, than just your regular kitchen compost.
Mm-hmm.
But, everything can be recycled.
You don't want to put anything with glossy paper in there for some reason, I've read. But
what kind of paper?
Glossy paper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, magazine, those slick magazine kind of things.
Yeah, magazines. But now, newsprint now is printed with soy ink. So that seems okay. And cardboard, if it's not treated, if it's just straight cardboard, worms love cardboard. And I mean, they don't break down and everything. So, and you know, you want worms in your garden. So
right. Well, there's a technique called lasagna layering.
Yeah.
You can Google that too. And you put down you put layers, like a brown layer and a green layer. So a brown layer would be cardboard. On top of that, you put your green grass clipping, and so on. And you can lay. And you know, the time to start your garden soil for next year is right now.
Yes.
Get your compost pile going.
And get your garlic planted now.
Get your garlic planted. Garlic is another one. Garlic is a miracle herb.
It is. It's an antibacterial kind of thing.
It's one of the best antifungals I've ever found. When I was riddled with candidiasis, I mean, I was so sick with it. It was coming out of my pores. I'd have white thrush stuff on my arms, you know.
Oh.
It was horrible, really. And I found a book on the miracle properties of garlic, and I started reading, and it said it was antifungal. Well, that's what candidiasis is. And I took that home. Oh, that was the turning point for me. I took tons of garlic oil. You can get them in gelatin capsules. Mm-hmm. I get mine from Swanson Vitamins because they're far cheaper. And I take it every day. It lowers your blood pressure. It's terrific for your cardiovascular system. And it kills fungus. It will kill athlete's foot in about 12 hours.
Wow.
All right. Now, I went to the doctor, this is 15 years ago, with athlete's foot on my feet. This is when I was so riddled with candidiasis. And the doctor writes me a prescription. I look at it and I asked him what it was. Oh, it's an antibiotic. Guess what? Antibiotics feed fungus. So what they're giving me would have made the problem worse.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's another unnecessary antibiotic, which
changes
a lot of nutrients out of your system.
It's efficient.
So
exactly.
I take a garlic capsule and I prick it with a pin and I put it on my athlete's foot or wherever in my body, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You in order to be effective, you want capsules that are like at least 500 milligrams with their garlic.
Sure.
You'll find some that are one or two, but they're totally worthless. It won't do anything.
Yeah. Truly. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a miracle one. It really is. I've been an herbalist for, I don't know, 35 years. There's tons of herbs out there that will do things. And you use them in combination, and they're far more powerful than just the one herb alone. And so I think herbs are really great. But I really, everything that I've ever found, disease is caused from a loss of nutrients.
Right.
You know, and most of this stuff is really not very expensive. And yeah, it's a lot of vitamin taking every day, but what's your alternative? To feel crummy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's never been a problem. They used to take a lot. And, you know, the thing is now we've got the chemtrails, we've got the GMOs in the food. All of these things are changing our chemistry.
Yep.
And so even though, you know, somebody says, well, you know, I was checked 5 years ago and I was fine with this. It's like, okay, that was 5 years ago. You've breathed an awful lot and eaten an awful lot since then. It wouldn't hurt to check again.
Exactly.
Because we are, and our bodies are changing just because of these things we've talked about, the toxins, the pollution, but also because we are in this 2012 transformative change, and humans are hopefully raising their vibrations, which is also a physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that are much more sensitive, they can feel it. I mean, they know. They can tell. Even people who in the past might not have been first to know have noticed different things in their feelings and all. And now some of these helps that you've given us, these aids, they'll probably work faster now than they would have in the past. And why I say that is our friend from the Daughters of Isis, Gwen Holdenberry, has said that she's a like an oil mixer. She does wonderful things with oils and homeopathy and things.
Mm-hmm.
She said homeopathy is working so much faster now.
Really?
And it's always been pretty fast, actually.
Yeah.
But it's really speeding up. And
yeah.
So that's why I'm thinking that these hints that you're giving us, these items, are probably going to work faster also because our bodies are speeding up.
Mm-hmm.
It only makes sense. It just follows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said Nutra.com.
Nutra.com.
Was a good place to go.
For vitamin C, yeah.
Ah.
And they don't charge for shipping. It's like $30 for a big bottle, but it lasts you for several months.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you've got candidiasis, garlic oil will help really great. And a lot of people have it, or what they call thrush, a lot of people have it, they don't even know that they do.
I've heard of that, yeah.
So, you know, you can Google that for the symptoms, again. There's another thing that I want to bring up about thyroid, and there's an absolutely top-notch, fabulous website on the internet, and it's called StopTheThyroidMadness.com. StopTheThyroidMadness.com. This woman, I think, is a saint. She was diagnosed with, I think it was breast cancer, some kind of cancer, and I don't know, a slew of stuff. This woman was, she had like four bouts of chemo, and somewhere along the way, she got clued into the fact that all she needed to do really was take iodine. And so she did, and she started getting better. And then she was like me. She started doing all of her own research, and she healed herself, which is what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Janie, and she has tons of information about all of it. And that's where I found out that hypothyroidism and diabetes are linked. Often if you have one, you'll have the other one.
Yes.
They're somehow linked. But there's also an email list, and you can get on that and ask your questions, and she'll answer. It's a, this woman has now become a naturopath, and she's a very sweet woman and very patient, and you will learn tons and tons and tons of things. And so I recommend getting on that site. Adrenal fatigue. That's where I found out I had adrenal fatigue, because that often goes along with the hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, hormone, thyroid is a hormone. Adrenal is a hormone. Your hormones get whacked out. Well, you know.
Yeah.
And so I've had to treat myself for that, and that's been a year and 9 months, and I'm finally at the tail end of it. You know, don't expect miracle results overnight. These things can... You didn't get unhealthy in one day.
Well, that's it. It took years to get to that point. Now, the story I told that the 20-year-old with the kidney stones, that is unusual. However, they are finding different kinds of cancer and things in younger and younger people.
Yeah.
And it has to do with what we're eating and what we're breathing.
Yeah.
And you just walk down a street in this country, the United States,
mm-hmm.
and look at all the overweight people, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not skipping along smiling. They're trudging, frowning, because of their health. And we all know when your health is down, you're just pretty down. I mean, it's really hard to feel lively and get that smile on and keep it on if you're not feeling good. So,
I forgot what I was going to say. Genetically modified foods, okay? They are finding out, I don't know if you're probably aware of this, but some of our listeners may not be, but it's about a week ago, huge bombshell news came out. They released the results of the study of genetically modified food, and they had pictures of these rats where the tumors were bigger than the rats.
Yes,
it was horrendous, and it's launching an investigation into this, and Monsanto is desperately trying to thwart California passing a bill that says you need to label the GMOs. But we're getting more and more of these GMOs in our diet, and what are they going to do to our children? They destroy the DNA. They destroy it. In other words, if pretty much everybody here in America is eating these things, let's just say this is going to cause mutation, and that together with the radiation coming over from Fukushima, that's what I'm saying. It's coming here. But to me,
we have some here escaping. I mean, we have some very bad plants here.
But I forget what I was going to say.
But you're talking about the GMOs and Monsanto. Yes, in California, please vote. Crop 37. This is important because if California goes, so go the rest of us.
The point I wanted to make is that as far as reproduction goes, we're going to be giving birth to mutant children and with all kinds of problems. And it's, to me, you might as well just say goodbye to the human race if people around the world eat this stuff.
Well, now see, these companies don't care because remember, companies, big multi-corporations, are the ones that get rich on war. And look at the children that are still being born in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about mutant children. So they don't care.
No.
They don't care what happens here. So it's up to people. They say that in prepared food now, at least 70 to 80% of them will have GMOs in them. And they won't tell you. But, you know, when people eat the things with the corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup and all this is coming from corn, this GMO. I mean, if you just get down to the ingredients, and it's not going to say GMO. It should, and this is what we're saying. Vote yes on Prop 37 in California.
And here's why we need to get this stuff labeled, because in Germany,
they've thrown them out. A lot of the countries in Europe and around the world have thrown Monsanto and that ilk out.
Well, what happened in Germany is they started labeling the GMO food. Nobody would buy it, and they weren't making any money, so they withdrew. And that's why we need to get it labeled here in this country.
Exactly. Right.
And let me tell you, I live in the middle of farmland, and I have deep, deep respect for farmers. They are so hardworking, and they care very, very much about what they produce.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmers are getting railroaded right out of business.
Yes, yes. And the farmers that are trying to do, but see, that's why all those men and all those farmers in India, what has it been? I've heard numbers from 200,000 to over a million in the past few years have killed themselves because of agribusiness coming in when Monsanto and all these farmers were doing fine. They were making a living. They were rotating their crops. They were doing everything they were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But here they came.
They couldn't feed their families.
Yeah.
They could not feed their families. And
now they can't. Yeah, so they started killing themselves. I mean, and that's something there again. It's on the shoulders of these big corporations. But
well,
they don't care.
One of the first things we did when we went in and invaded Iraq was we declared it totally illegal for them to use or keep any seeds from heirloom plants. And that meant that they had to all buy Monsanto. And I don't even know what's going on with those people at this point. But they had for thousands of years been saving their heirloom seeds. Now, I plant only heirlooms. I know what it's like. It's a spiritual practice for me to go and gather the seeds from the heirlooms for next year. It's just an amazing thing. It's like this stuff, all I need to do is spend like $2.50 on a packet of seeds and, you know, maybe for beets or something. For the rest of my life, I've got beets and I don't have to spend another dime.
Right. And when you do that, make sure you use some company that has not sold out to Mount Cancer because they're buying up a lot of the small companies. Baker's Creek in Mansfield, Missouri. Yes, they are.
They're a young family. They're a small family business. They're fighting the GMOs
they're fighting heavy.
And they're leading the way in California to get GMOs labeled. And it's getting harder and harder every year for organic gardeners and heirloom gardeners to produce pure seed. And this is why they're getting involved.
Yeah.
But their seeds are excellent, top-notch. I love Baker Creek.
Great service. I can't say enough good about them. But, Ariel, we're going to have to go. I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Given us a lot of websites. I'm going to put those on Air Market Fuel Radio and Facebook. And also, people can check you out at www.greeneggzine.com.
And I'm in the process of putting up a whole huge health page. If you miss some information, that'll be up there, plus any new information I get as I go along. Diabetes, I'm about to plunge into diabetes and see if I can get my husband healthy from it.
There you go.
So,
okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ruth. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to have a little ad here and some music.
In the beginning of September, you'll find DaughtersOfIsis.com, fully functional and waiting for you to go on over and make your purchases of any of our oils or our flower essence formulas or misters or powders, potions, and brews, because we've even got teas. That's the ancestor of aromacology over at DaughtersOfIsis.com. Thank you now for coming by to see us. We appreciate it.
Okay, you're listening to High Grade and Roxy Samurai. And tonight, the second hour here, we have Elaine Fleming. And
Eileen,
I'm sorry, I'm looking at this like, wait a minute, her name is Eileen, and I've seen Eileen earlier, I don't know, my brain
That's all right, it happens all the time.
Not even that late here. anyway, after a horrible beginning, yes. Hi, Eileen, I'm glad to have
Hi,
you
Ruth.
Here. And you're the founder of WeAreWideAwake.org. Among many other things, right? And you're running for public office.
Yes, and it kind of can I put you on speaker because I'm having a hard time hearing you. So tell me if this will be okay. Hold on one second,
hey, sure.
please. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. What happened was I was before 9/11. I was not even political. I was definitely into, you know, very active in my life, but 9/11 happened, and especially when Bush went on TV that a couple of days after and told us all to go shopping if we wanted to help, I went berserk and said, wait a minute, nobody hates us because we're free, I'm not buying this, and I don't want to go look at shoes. I want to know, why do some people in the world hate us? Because the only hate can drive something so horrific. And if 9/11 taught us anything, it's that no government, no one can secure us from the acts of even one violent, mad man. I mean,
violent people are from our own country. Which
exactly.
Was an eye-opener for me. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we don't know so much. We don't know so much. They don't want us to know.
I started
investigating. I researching on the internet. Blah blah blah. I read, also because I'm a Christian that takes Jesus real seriously, and I'm talking about the Jesus who said to Peter, put down the sword, and it is the peacemakers who are the children of God, and you must forgive to be forgiven, and, you know, you must love and bless your enemies, not bomb, torture, occupy them. So I was looking for something positive to do, because I really dissented from the policies that Bush enacted, and it really pissed me off, because I remember candidate Bush saying his favorite philosopher was Jesus, and President Bush had absolutely nothing to do with the philosophy and ethics of Jesus. So I just started, you know, I've got a little bit of Irish in me, and I would just get madder and madder and angrier, and I think the best thing you can do with your anger is just get it out in a positive way, which I found for me is writing. And I connected with an interfaith Olive Trees Foundation for Peace, which was founded by a 1948 Palestinian Muslim refugee from the Upper Galilee who made his way to the USA into a position in the defense industry with top secret clearance during the Cold War. And after 9/11, he brought together, this has all happened in Orlando at this time, he's in Orlando, and he brings together the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims, to literally extend the olive branch by, one, raising awareness about Israel's separation wall, which we, the people of America, provide like nearly 3 million per mile to erect, and it is illegal wherever it does not follow the green line, which is most places. But anyway, he brought together all these people of deep faith, and even people, there were Buddhists and, you know, atheists, and different people got really involved in it, and we raised the funds to provide for 40,000 three-year-old olive tree saplings that have been planted on, pardon?
That's wonderful. I mean, considering
they were planted on both sides of the wall, because the dream is that wall will fall, and there's trees on both sides. And, well, the founder just recently died a few weeks ago, so it's also a sad passing. But what happened is my first book, Keep Hope Alive, based on his memories, but also what happened, you see, I connected with the Olive Tree Foundation for Peace, my very first meeting there.
I show up and I'm the only Christian in a house full of strangers, and they're either Jewish or Muslim, and they're all doing my faith. They were all loving each other and blessing each other, and they, you know, I mean, they were friends, you know,
yeah.
But they're Jews and Muslims, and I said to myself, I said, Jesus Christ, you look at these Jews and Muslims. Imagine what all we Christians do, exactly what you said we're supposed to do. You know, you got to forgive, you got to work together, and
yeah.
Move on, and that's what happened. But anyway, long story short, my first trip to Israel, Palestine, both sides of the wall, was in June 2005. 10 of us went, Dr. Diab, the founder, the Jewish co-founder. I was not the Christian founder in any way. I was just had the biggest mouth. So I was the one who got to go. And we took, there was like a contest in the middle school at the Jewish and the Christian and the Muslim, you know, junior high, you know, junior schools anyway, and they, it was awarded. There was a little Jewish girl won the award, a writing contest, blah, blah, blah. So it was like, and another student from a public high school came. So it was like this, you know, educational blah, blah, blah thing. We went and visited the villages where, you know, the trees had been rooted, and we went to make connections for the following year. But what happened to me is, as I'm traveling through, and you go to Israel, you go to Galilee and Haifa and Tel Aviv, it's like, you know, could be any place in America. But you go to the little town of Bethlehem in occupied territory, and you have the biggest shock to your system because you feel the occupation in your gut. You approach, and on my second, the cover of my second book, if people tune in to wearewideawake.org, you could see the book covers. And my second book, my memoirs of a nice Irish American girl's life in occupied territory, you see this photo, and it's no longer there now. The Israeli government has changed the faux painting on this wall, but it's as you're leaving Jerusalem and entering Bethlehem, you come to this 30-foot high, you know, the wall and the terminal where all the Palestinians have to go through, and on the wall it said peace, 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 and it's like, oh, I mean, it's like so Orwellian, and that was the thing. I felt as if I had truly entered the most surreal. It was just a time out of mind, a time out of, I can't explain it. I don't think,
like between worlds,
but it can really. Pardon?
Like between worlds.
I'm so sorry, I can't
hear
that.
Like between worlds. I mean, a time that's not really a time. You're totally disoriented, kind of feel.
Well, it wasn't so much a sense of disorientation as much as I cannot believe how it was the scales coming off of my eyes, because when I went
mm-hmm.
over there, I thought I could stay neutral. You know, she had a side, they're both right, they're both wrong, you know, and I thought I could stick in the middle, but no, 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 no. When you are confronted with such gross injustice, you cannot not. So I became flamingly political on that trip, flamingly political, and that is when my Jesus morphed into, because up until then I was teaching Sunday school. I was a, you know, I was like a church, you know, was it, remember the Saturday night church lady? But anyway, and there I go over there, and it's like I can't believe what the media is not telling us, and I can't believe what our government doesn't want us to know, and I'm meeting all these nonviolent Palestinians, Israelis, internationals who are against, who want to end the Israeli military occupation of Palestine, which some people say began, you know, 1948 when Israel became a
right.
state. Some people go to 67.
Yeah.
I want to zero in on 67 a little bit because of the USS Liberty, and this is all part of my evolution here because
mm-hmm.
I go over there, my first trip, I'm researching my first book, and during my research, I stumble into this incredible story about Mordecai Vanunu, and I write him into the book, you know, that I had up at that time, and it begins my third book, and it's it's a chapter out of my first book, and it's how truly telling the story of the Nunu, how I came to know it back when I was doing my research, and basically in a nutshell, in 1986, the London Sunday Times, in fact, today, October 5th, it's 26 years to the very day today that we're talking, that the London Sunday Times published a headline story, 3 pages, I think, lots of photos, that Vanunu, who is a mid-level tech in Israel's weapons of mass destruction facility called, well, the Dimona, but when Vanunu worked there at that time, the sign said textile plant. And everybody who worked there, you signed an agreement that you would not ever talk about what you did. Everything was, you know, secret, blah, blah, blah. And everything was very compartmentalized. So nobody really knew what they were doing, and you just come in, you do your job, and you just go in there for a paycheck. People don't think, you know, they're just little robots. Well, anyway, because Vanunu was a good worker and smart, he had a crisis of conscience when he realized he's a cog making weapons of mass destruction. And he sneaks in on separate occasions, camera and film, hides him in his locker. One night he seizes his opportunity when a supervisor leaves the keys to all the top secret locations in the shower room. And Vanunu never said who the supervisor was. He never got this guy in trouble, but he picked up the keys and he went to work very fast. And I said, Vanunu, I said, weren't you like nervous? He goes, well, he said, one time, I mean, I couldn't believe he was so cool doing this. I mean, here you are taking photo. I mean, you don't know, do they have cameras on? You know, I mean, it's an incredible story. And he says, well, he says he was in one place one time and somebody walks in and they say, what are you doing in here? And he says, oh, I came in for these gloves. I mean, how he had the presence of mind, I say, God had this guy tapped from childhood that he was going to do something big. And he hates when anybody sees a prophet. Yeah. He totally rejects that. But that's what most prophets do. And when I say prophet, I'm not talking saint or, I'm not talking Mandela or king or anything. I'm talking somebody who points out danger and provokes those so inclined to think about God to think. That, you know, that's the way I see a prophet. But anyway, he still rejects it, but anyway, that's beyond the issue. Where was I now? I'm sorry, I got sidetracked.
No, you're talking, he was still in there, and he had the presence of mind to say, oh, I came in.
Oh, yeah, he was so cool, calm, and collected about it. And anyway, so he, sneaks the camera and the film out on separate occasions because they check, you know, the employees, you know, security, you know. Sure. It's like, you know, what they do to us at the airports, you know.
Yeah.
Checking all this
at
stuff,
them.
But they're not checking, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, he does not even develop this film. He quits. They're going to, they were laying off people. They wanted to switch him to a different location, and he said no, he didn't want to go, and that then, you know, he was either going to stay where he is, because they were also putting a lot of pressure on him, because at the same time this was all going on there, he had become, I should really go back a bit in history. When I met Vanunu in 2005, a very chance meeting, serendipitous meeting, and spent a couple of days with him in 2005, and I told him, I said, I got to tell your story until you're free to leave, because it's an incredible story, and I was most interested in how he stumbled into Christianity and his childhood. So that's a lot about what's in my book, and I guess I shouldn't even go into it. Let people buy the book, because 100% goes to Vanunu's trust fund, his Liberty Fund, I've renamed it, but he has American parents who adopted him during his 18 years in prison. They're in their 80s, I believe now, Nick and Mary Eloff, and they're in the Midwest. And
I saw pictures of them and the video, and I just cried and cried.
Yes, and I think the video begins them dancing. Was that the one you saw? That Link TV had it on a few years ago, and it's on the YouTube. Anyway, they're lovely people, Pax Christi Christians, and they thought, well, if they adopted him while he's in prison, that would help release him, but of course that didn't sway Israel in the least. And then when they released Fununu in 2004, they, after this is 18 years, they locked this guy up, most of it all in solitary, and they forbid him to speak to foreigners. They forbid him to have a cell phone, to be on the internet, to, you know, approach an embassy. He can't leave. I mean, all these draconian restrictions. Well, they know darn well he's going to break every one he possibly can, which is, of course, the second he got out of prison, he immediately starts talking, and why shouldn't he? And people can go on the YouTube and see Vanunu. His video, his YouTube channel is Vanunu Mordecai Video, but if people go on EileenFleming.org, which is the website now for my campaign, and if you just click on, I think it's International Supporters or something like that, and you'll scroll down, and it kind of explains the Vanunu situation, and it's got the little link to his YouTube, because that's pretty much at this point the only place he's speaking to the outside world is on his YouTube channel. That Israel has, they're constantly pressuring him, and I don't know if you're aware, last week, I believe it was, a big, in the Israeli press and international media, not in American media, Gunter Grass, a Nobel laureate, a German writer, he's 85 years old. He came out with a new book of poems. He got in trouble a few months back. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a new poem, and the article's on my website, wearewideawake.org or EileenFleming.org. And he wrote a new poem. In fact, the article is Vanunu Responds to Gunter Grass, and they can read that and catch up. But, oh, darn it, this is what happens. I feel like I'm just talking to a friend, and I lose my mind because I'm forgetting that we're on the radio here, Ruth Ann.
It's okay. People know. We're quite casual, obviously.
Yeah, believe me, it is. Because, you know, it's like I get up before the dawn here, and it's like I'm crashing. So tell me where I was. Okay, well, here, let me just start here. Okay, so here's the thing. 26 years ago, to this very day, the London Sunday Times publishes the front page story, and they still have all the photos. Peter Hunam was the investigative reporter who broke that story. Peter Hunam also happened to write a book, Operation Cyanide, and have your listeners talked about the Liberty, USS Liberty?
Yes. Yes, U.S. Liberty actually makes me physically ill when, you know, finding out that Johnson called back the ship that was going to help our ship after the Israelis spent 2 hours machine gunning it. And it was meant to, they were trying to sink it, and they were going to blame it on the Egyptians.
Yes.
Yeah,
thank you
totally.
Very much. Yes.
Yeah.
And if you go on either of my sites, you'll see a big part of my campaign is if I'm elected, my first House resolution will be to write to establish every June 8th as USS Liberty Remembrance Day. And a few weeks ago, I went up, you know, because, you know, the Rand Paul people, they're all these big Campaign for Liberty people, right?
Mm.
Okay, so anyway, I thought, well, shoot, they should really latch on to this liberty thing. So I went up to their little conference there, and it's on my website. It's all there. But I went, I paid extra to get into the little meetings with Senator Rand Paul and DeMint and, is it Mike Evans? I can't even remember. There was three senators. Anyway, I asked them, you know, it was supposed to be like one of these little briefings, and what they basically want are these softball questions, you know, that they're like, you know. That's not why I paid money to get here. I mean, and then they're getting right to me. Okay. I mean, I'm like ninth in around this table. And, you know, they're just wasting all this time, these people, they yak and all this irrelevant bullshit, you know, that I'm sitting through and I'm dying because I'm looking at the time. And they get right to me. Rand Paul looks right at me and he says, you know, we're running out of time. And I said, wait a minute. I said, no. I said, I didn't come up here to be shut up. And I stood up And I said, look, I said, I'm here for many reasons. I'm running for U.S. House of Representatives, District 5, and I have my little campaign cards, and it's a photo of me and Helen Thomas. And she's got her Palestinian flag bracelet on, and I'm holding her hand up. And the card says, journalists Helen Thomas and Eileen Fleming tell the truth. Eileen Fleming, let's house, and I throw these flags at them. And there's three senators, right? And they're little guys. I'm like not even 5'4", but I don't think they're like 5'6", 5'7". They're little guys, and they're sitting down. So I stand up. So I kind of look big, you know? And so I kind of scared them, I think, but I didn't think of it at the moment. And so I said, and there's a reason I have my picture there with Miss Helen Thomas, but first I want to ask you this question. If I get elected, my first act is, you know, I'm going to write this U.S., establish every June 8th U.S. as Liberty Remembrance Day. Will you support that initiative? And the reason my photo is with Miss Helen Thomas is because one of the reasons is because her first and last questions to Obama was, remember, about nuclear weapons in the Middle East, and Obama says, "Oh, I can't speculate." Well, I said, "You know, there's no need to speculate." And then I flip out my Venuti book, and it's got this great photo of him on the cover. And I said, "Because 26 years ago, this man, Mordecai Vanunu, told the truth and provided the photographic proof of Israel's weapons of mass destruction, and nuclear physicists verified in 1986 that Israel had already manufactured upwards of 200 nuclear warheads and were working on thermonuclear technology, and nobody's done anything about it since. Will you say, do something about it?" And the poor moderator, you know, you thought Jim Blair had a bad time last night? The poor little moderator, this 27-year-old kid, trying to get me to sit down and shut up. No way was I going to sit down and shut up.
Damn straight.
Plus, you know, healthy democracy is when the government knows we know more than they damn know. And but I think it was DeMint. He was very gracious, and he said, you know, I stumped him. Usually he'll say no comment, but I totally stumped him. So afterwards, I gave him a DVD of, you know, Blood in the Water, and people can also see that's on YouTube. It's also embedded on my article at wearewideawake.org. I bought Rand Paul. Oh, Rand Paul was during the little meeting thing, he said, you can't focus. Yeah, right. He said, well, you can't focus on, you know, like such long ago. I can't remember exactly what he said. And he said, well, you know, talking about Israel's nuclear weapons, that's just the beginning of this. That's just the start of the conversation. I said, that's damn straight. So I went and I bought his book, and I gave him my Venuti book after. And he was very gracious, and he said, I hope I wasn't, you know, negative when I said that. And I said, no. I said, the point is, 1967 is when U.S. policy changed, and that's where we have to know our history, and that's what we have to remember. And Americans don't know. So many. I'm so glad your audience knows, that's what. And if people do, please, there's nothing else. Go to wearewideawake.org, and you'll see my USS Liberty link. I've had the great fortune of interviewing some of these survivors, and there's a petition that Joe Meters put out, and it's to get to Obama and Congress that, you know, we want an open investigation, and, you know, we want to tell the truth. We got to get that. That's, you know, and this is where American policy, and as you said, LBJ didn't want to didn't want to embarrass an ally. He also had darn good reason to know Israel was a nuclear power.
Yeah. I mean, the man telling the truth, and he's punished for it, and, you know, they won't admit anything. We know Israel's got, depending on who you listen to, between 200 and whatever.
400,
nuclear warheads. And, you know, they've not signed the Non-Proliferation Act.
Mm-hmm.
So it's illegal for us to do business with any other country.
Exactly.
Who has
it's illegal for us. That's right. They're breaking our laws all the time because we send all our $3 billion annually in military aid, and they use that in contradiction to our own export,
exactly.
You know,
and
U.S. export, yeah, our own laws.
Yeah.
Oh, no, and plus America is the biggest violator of the NPT since the day we signed it. Wasn't in violation.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be, you know, and Obama, it was like, I think it was like $54 billion annually to maintain, refurbish these nuclear bombs that we have, and it's called this LEP life, life. Oh, it'll come to me. LEP, extension program, life extension program, which takes our nuclear warheads, which, you know, is supposed to last like 30, 40 something years. Now they're going to last like 100 or something years. It's absolutely insane. All this money, it's immoral. It's insane.
Well,
all this money going for this when we've got people who are, I mean, it's insane.
Right. When our own people, one out of four children in this country goes to bed hungry. Iran, our government is so intent on fighting because of good old Israel. Iran signed the Non-Proliferation Act. So we should be doing business and helping them.
That's right.
Rather than Israel.
And, you know, here's the thing. Iran has never threatened us. They're not threatening us, and they're not threatening Israel. What they talk with, and you have the languages, the Zionist regime is what it's always about. They're talking the military occupation, which everywhere in the world except America, it's understood as U.S. collaboration, because, you know, we provide the money, we provide the policy, we collude in the policy, you know, especially their nuclear ambiguity, deceptions. We collude in it. Obama came out, it was reported, and I think even the Washington Post, that Obama agreed to, you know, continue this nuclear ambiguity, but it's bullshit. It's deceptive, and you know, there's got to be an end to it. And, you know, then you hear these reports. Oh, you know, Lieberman's trying to get, you know, like the internet. You know, they want to put a plug on the internet. And I'm telling you, man, Big Brother, you know, we are living Orwell's nightmare. So it's like this election, and it's not the freaking president. It doesn't matter who's president. This is a big point in my run is all the Constitution requires is you be at least 25, a citizen for 7 years, and live in the state your district resides at the time of your inauguration. That's it. That's the only requirement to enter in the U.S. House. So I'm trying to get the message out to 20-something years old, you know, while you've got Facebook and Twitter and all this other stuff, run yourself. Be a write-in candidate. If you don't like what's being offered you, get yourself on the ballot or somebody you can support and upset the darn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we need to have some nonviolent anarchy in this country and shake it up, because neither the Republicans or the Democrats are going to save us. We the people. It's our right to alter or abolish this government, because it's no longer in our best interest.
This government isn't working, obviously.
From
the ground, the ground swell. We're not going to get any kind of democracy or justice from the top down. That we can count on.
Yeah, but you've got to see your rights. And I mean, and this is the thing. All these people that, you know, they're with this conservative things about, you know, the founding fathers. Maybe when it came to fiscal conservatives, yes. But on other issues, these men were not conservatives, man. They were radicals, rebels, dissidents, who essentially told the King of England, fuck off this land. We will not be an occupied people. So why do we think, where is this American arrogance that we think that it's okay for us to go and occupy other people or have, you know, Israel occupy the Palestinians? I mean, what kind of cognitive dissidence?
Well, you know, Columbus Day is coming up. And from the time he landed, you know, he's given all this credit. And when I was in school, you know, we celebrated Columbus Day and all this. And now, I think it's still on the calendars, but it's not quite such a big deal. And a lot of people just hate the idea, because what did he do? He came over as the colonial conqueror, started ruining the natives, did horrible things to them. And, you know, from then on, I mean, we did this with the natives. Then we brought in the African slaves. I mean, so this country does not have, I mean, while there's good things that people have done, the government has never been all that pure and innocent, you know?
Sure.
And so we really need to take care of some of this before, you know, We never need to be minding somebody else's business, but we need to.
I totally agree. We've got enough problems right here in this homeland.
Please.
I say let's bring all the troops home and all these corporations, i.e. people, let them pay for their own security. And they can buy a lot from Israel because, you know, that's after 9/11, man. Where did we go for all our homeland security? Israel. Because that's their experts in security, everything.
They stole some of their stuff from us way back. I mean, they've stolen secret things from us, and our government knows it and lets them. I just read today that our country spends more on Israel's defense than Israel does.
Yeah, I know, it's insane. And their economy is doing better than ours.
Because we're supporting it. We can't support our own.
Oh, I know. And then on top of it, not just the government, we the taxpayers, but then you've got all these Christian Zionist churches that adopt all these, little settlements, man. And, you know, you're talking, a lot of money goes over there from America, and it's not, you know, what George Washington said.
The Armageddon thing.
They all want this rapture, and won't they be surprised we get a nuclear holocaust, man? Nobody's going anywhere. We're all fried.
It's like, you know, they really need to get their head out of their ass I know the visuals are really ugly, but no, just
well, but
big
it's true problem. And that is another reason why I wrote my first book, because it was really, it's Dr. Diaz's memories of being a refugee, but it's also my spiritual story as a child of the 60s and, what was going on. I'm always, everything was like my point of view, when he was telling me his stories, I was always reflecting it. What was happening in America at the time I was growing up, like when I met Venino, I'm 9 months older than he is. So everything he's telling me, like when he's growing up in Marrakesh, Morocco, and the Zionists come in 1963 and convince his Orthodox father to pack up the family. His father's got a, fairly, well-established grocery store. His mother's a seamstress. Mm-hmm. They've got it, according to Moroccan standards, they're very well off. And, oh, no, but now they're going to move to the land of milk and honey, and they're assigned to the ethnically cleansed village of Be'er Sheva. And Be'er Sheva is one of over 500 Palestinian villages that Israel ethnically cleansed. Just the people fled. They destroyed it. They took it over. They've changed the names. These villages are gone now, but Venini would say, he'd wander around and see a mosque, but never any Palestinians until he went to university. And that's when he got involved with Palestinian, human rights issues, and that's when they started really watching him and putting pressure on him. So they were watching him for quite some time, and they're still watching him. He's still waiting, and he tried, oh my gosh, a year or more ago, to revoke his Israeli citizenship as a way to get, out of Israel.
Yeah, right.
And after waiting over a year, they tell him, oh, well, he didn't submit it through proper channels, whatever that is. They make up the rules as they go along.
Yeah.
And basically what it boils down to is they think Venini's still got something in his head that can hurt them. But this guy has talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of people since he was released in 2004. I've enshrined many of the stories he told me, not all of them. But I'm encouraging people, if you go over to Jerusalem, if you can get to East Jerusalem, track him down. His website is venunu.com, and his birthday, in fact, is on the 13th of October. People can phone him. They can email him. He's got his contact information at venunu.com, because the .org was taken while he was in prison. I believe it was the Norwegians set that up for him. He's got a lot of support in Norway. He's got a lot of support in the UK, If you're on Facebook, there's the free Vanunu cause, Free Mordecai Vanunu. It's got over 6,000 members. I've been active on it, but come Election Day, I'm deactivating my Facebook account, so I will disappear from Facebook because I've got to pull plugs on a lot of different things so I can write my fourth book. First, let me tell you, my third book title is, which again, all the you know, funds, profits, whatever, are going to Vanunu's USA Trust Fund that his American parents set up. But that book is called Beyond Nuclear, Mordecai Vanunu's Freedom of Speech Trial and My Life as a Muckraker, 2005-2010. My fourth book is called Vanunu Waits for Liberty and My Life as a Candidate of Conscience for U.S. House Seeking Justice for USS Liberty. Because as I said, I want to write a House resolution. Let's establish June 8th. We need to know our history. This is the history. These young people should be learning in junior high and high school the history of U.S. and Israeli, you know, and you get back to LBJ. Right before he had his girlfriend was a Irgun operative, Matilde Krim. I think it was Jeff Gates did the expose on that, and then I picked up and you know, added it into an article. But I'm sure if you go to my USS Liberty series, I think I did a book review. I've done a couple of book reviews. You'll see it there. So he was kind of, you know, he was, and LBJ was a Christian Zionist. So you get all religion caught up in politics, bad religion, because there's nothing Christian about Zionism, first of all.
No, it's not a religion. It's a political entity.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Exactly. It is. Yeah, as Zionism has become, it began originally that, you know, Jewish people would have a safe and peaceful home, and probably Israel is like the least safe and peaceful place for any Jew to be, any place else in the world. Nobody pays any attention. But anyway, it's morphed into this ideology of superiority, and it's made a sick culture, you know. But you know, the Israeli people, if you go and you hang out with the regular Israeli people, you know, especially activists, you know, most of the people, if you go to West Jerusalem, I did that one day. I went to the west side of Jerusalem, just man on the street. I said, what do you think about the occupation? And the response usually was, what occupation? I'm saying the one that we can walk to in an hour. It happened in Bethlehem. It's not even in there. They have no clue.
I have a friend that I talked to on Skype and on Facebook and things, who he's not Orthodox, but he's a religious Jew. And he said that he did visit Gaza, I think he said 20 years ago, and he doesn't believe that it's like it is. He doesn't believe that the West Bank is the way it is. He knows a couple Palestinians, and I mean, God knows where he found them, who seem to be happy with their lives. And so he thinks everything is good, and this is just... you know, the way it's going to be, but because he's a religious Jew, he has a lot of different, he's waiting for the 1,000-year reign, or he's waiting for some kingdom to come, and he thinks everything, you know, it's going to be soon, and everybody's going to be happy. And
there's that strain in Islam and Christianity, it's escapist theology, but he's in a land of denial, as was, and I'll say this because she'll never hear it, and maybe it would be great if she did, but when we went my first trip, I've been, you know, 7 times to both sides of the wall in Israel-Palestine, and the first trip when I went with the Olive Trees people, the Jewish co-founder, while we stayed in Israel, everything was fine, but when it was time to go over to the West Bank, she wouldn't go. And I said, why won't you go? And she says, well, I'm Jewish. And I said, but your passport says you're American. She goes, but I'm Jewish. And I said, but they don't know that. You're American. And I didn't understand at the time, but I understood after that if she had gone over, then she could no longer maintain that land of denial, that everything is fine and we can put a happy face on this.
Okay.
And you know,
yeah.
Kumbaya, and we can bring the kids together and sing about, you know, peace, you know, like not in my lifetime, but, you know, like Obama, you know, no more nukes, but not in my lifetime. Bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, if you have that dream, it is for your lifetime. You've got to pursue it as if it is.
It is.
Now. You know, we can't keep kicking this can down the road. So what I've, you know, here I started, not even political, before 9/11, and here we are now where I'm at. And if I do get elected, I want you to remember, I'm saying it right here publicly, I've said it to everybody who's asked me, it's a God thing. It will be an act of God for me to get elected because I've got no base. I mean, I can't even vote for myself because what they did in Florida is they gerrymandered two new districts. So when this crazy dream to even run for Congress came, and when it came, was shortly after my first trip to Israel-Palestine, and I founded WeAreWideAwake.org. It's an internet newspaper, but it's my public service. There's no, I don't take ads. I've had over 8 million visitors, but they're not human beings. They're Israel and American cyber drones that monitor me. But, you know, it's nice to know I'm being monitored, even if they don't respect me and talk to me. Yeah, but that's all right. You know, that's who I want to talk to. I want to talk to them. I want to get in their face.
Yeah.
So, So anyway, oh, gosh, then I did it again. I am on one place and I go someplace else. It's horrible.
Okay.
I'll just late at night. Flat happy. But anyway, okay, so here's the deal on my run. All right, so, you know, if I get elected, it truly is a God thing. It really is, and there's just so many layers. It's been a spiritual journey for me. My three books, basically, I'm relating my spiritual journey, and I grew up as a, you know, Catholic, and I tuned it out, pretty much inspired by John Lennon when I was, I guess, I can't remember exactly, 7th, 8th grade, 8th, 9th, something like that, when he said that for my generation, the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. And I said, well, this is true because, you know, my folks take me to church every Sunday. They make me go to catechism every Wednesday. I can't tell you anything Jesus said, but dang, I know every single lyric to every Beatles song. So, yes, of course Jesus is more popular, you know. So I couldn't understand why there was all this backlash. And I lived up in Long Island at that time. There was not the backlash that it was, like, through the South, you know, against the Beatles. But I just remembered, you know, he's right. And here we're coming on John Lennon anniversary, October 9th. And that also to keep a positive thought for me because ABC and CBS, the local affiliates, are offering all the candidates 90 seconds, 3 minutes to get a little...
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So, and I tell you, my big part of my mission has just been to try to get big boy media to pay attention to my side of this, you know, what I've been trying to get out there. Get them to report on Israel's nukes, get them to put a little light on, you know, Vanunu, help them get free. And let's be honest, let's hold Israel to the same standards of accountability we want everybody else. And the other underlying girth of my campaign is America is a member state of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Israel's very statehood was contingent upon them upholding the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Which they haven't done at all.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's one of the little points I want to try to get out in my 3 minute to ABC. Maybe it'll get out. Maybe they'll edit it out. Maybe it'll just end up on the floor. But anyway, and I'm going on a little tour through District 5 because it's a gerrymandered district. It's incredible. What they did was I lived like Winter Park, Orlando for, oh my gosh, from the 70s, I think, the 80s. I can't remember. I moved out to Lake, I'm from New York, but I've been in Florida since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Orlando, Winter Park area, like from the 80s. In 1998, moved to Claremont, which is Lake County, 10 acres, environmentally protected area. And it at that time was Congressional District 5, okay? So when I submitted my paperwork a year ago, January, I put down I wanted to be in Congressional District 5. Well, they then gerrymandered to two new districts because of the population, and I haven't moved, but now where I live is District 10. Okay, but I stuck with District 5. I can't even vote for myself in that district, but I stuck with District 5 because, again, one of my big points is to just, you know, we don't need Democrats, Republicans. We need we the people. You know,
exactly.
We're all connected here. You know, the well-being of everyone in Florida is well dependent on the well-being of everyone in this nation, which is dependent on the well-being of everyone in the world. And,
exactly.
The environment, and, you know, we talk about jobs. You got all these candidates. They talk about jobs. Yeah, but listen, we've got why Florida is not leading in technology here. I don't get it. We've got all these imagination people, you know, from the Disney. You know, we've got all those people. You've got all these
creative people.
Yeah.
You've got a crazy governor. Eileen.
Oh, don't get me started there. But you got all these tech people out there on the Cape. Why can't you get these people together with the environmental people and start working on our wind, our water, you know, all the free stuff that we have, and let's go green. And all these people, these uneducated, unemployed
people
who are getting welfare, I say, listen, if they're 18 and they want a job, they need a job, landscaping and learning about how to take care of, you know, plants.
Right, the permaculture.
Exactly.
We need this desperately.
Exactly.
No, you can make so much sense. I mean, it's
exactly.
A win-win.
Exactly. And another win-win, I say, my other House resolution I'm going to write is the compassionate cannabis bill, which will eliminate all the federal regulations on cannabis, and it will be a state's rights issue. They can decide to legalize. They will be they can keep and reap all the profits from, you know, cultivation to dissemination. Whatever way the states want to do it, man, that's up to them. And I'm telling you, they could fund schools, they could fund their, you know, Medicaid. There would be plenty of money. But, you know, who would fight it, of course, is the pharmaceuticals companies and the liquor lobby. But I say tough. Because,
other one will be somebody who's big down there, the Correctional Corporations of America. Because they're the people who lobby for this three strikes and things. They're the ones who are determined to keep the prisons that they keep building full.
Right.
So
yeah,
they
people
will
full of people.
Also.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. Greed, you know, it's the love of money is at the root of all evil. And that's what I'm up against here. So, you know, the best thing people can do to help me is, one, disseminate the site, tell people about it, and, you know, read me, and just encourage people to get out there and you know, get somebody in your area to, if you don't like who's on the ballot, find somebody locally you can support, look for alternatives, and write people in. Just because, I mean, it's not Democrat, Republican. We see the sorry state of it, that pathetic debate. I mean,
it's embarrassing. You know, I think about, we've got either, I've seen both figures, either 307 or 315 million people in this country, and look who's running for president.
I know.
I mean,
I know.
It's like, what the hell just happened? I just don't get
I know.
It. And, you
know,
people
know.
Say, well, the smart people, you know, who'd want that job? But
that's right.
But,
yeah.
My God.
It's I know.
No,
it,
I'm definitely
is.
Third party across. I can't. You know, that whole thing about voting for the lesser of the two evils, still voting for evil.
No, it's still evil.
It's still evil.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I know. And see, as long as we stick with that mentality and keep pushing Republican or Democrat, then we're going to just keep perpetuating the same
exactly.
system. But what
working.
We need
you
in the debate, you know,
it.
If they would have had the Libertarian candidate, if they would have had, you know, a Green Party candidate, if they would have had, you know,
socialist,
these other alternatives, I mean, that would be a debate.
A
but these two guys, it's like, give me a break. We're so tired of these guys. And 4 years of any either of them is too much.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, yes, I'm big on term limits. I'm sorry. President, either 4 or 6 years and only
That's
one
it.
Term. That's
I agree. And congressional reps, man, I say two times, man, you're out. And I say
yes.
term limits on laws. We are living under so many laws passed
exactly.
by people who are long dead, not in
yes.
our best interests. Let's get
no.
rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, Ruthann, listen, when I get to run for president, you can be my vice president, okay?
Okay. We'll do it. The women. It's time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so much just doesn't make sense anymore.
I know.
The people who know me, I'll make it fast, but I just love the story of, and you may have heard it, the women were fixing food. It was some kind of a family meal, and this young woman said to her mom, you know, well, why am I cutting the ends off this ham? Why do we always do this? And the mother said, I don't know. Your grandmother did it, and she's in the other room. Let's go ask her. So they went and asked her, and she said, oh, well, because the hams were so big, we had to cut the ends off. So now, you know, they've got bigger pans, smaller hams, and they're still cutting the ends off. So, it's, you know, you need to know why these things came about. And it doesn't apply anymore. Then get rid of these stupid laws.
Right. Common sense.
Yeah, common sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh,
yeah.
Responsibility. Well, we've been taught not to take responsibility.
Well, I say personal responsibility. I'm a nurse by education. I'm married to a doctor, and I know the healthcare system. One of the things it's burdened with, that neither of the presidential candidates even mentioned was, you know, mental health issues. And we've got, you know, 20% of our veterans returning with post traumatic stress disorder. They're committing suicide at ever increasingly alarming rates.
And plain shameful. I mean,
it is. And this is why I come back to the cannabis issue, is because medical science has documented those vets with access to medical marijuana report a much higher quality of life than on pharmaceuticals or talk therapy. So, you know, if we want to really support our veterans, we've got to do what their doctors are prescribing, allow it.
Exactly. I mean, while I don't want us to have war, I want us to bring everybody home. The people that we have put in those positions, I want good care for them. And they're not getting it.
They're not getting it. No.
They're not getting it.
And the men aboard the USS Liberty for 45 years, they have been, you know, treated so shabbily.
They meet DC or someplace every year, and there's fewer. And I mean, I would just love for somehow, while we still have some of them, for you to get this passed, a day in remembrance, and then check it out. I mean, make it known what really happened, because like you said, so many people don't have a clue.
Well, if they would disseminate that USS Liberty story, that is just so huge. It's so important. And you know, we want to say if we honor our troops, that's not waving a flag on a corner. Any monkey could do that. We got to listen to these guys, and these guys want to tell their story. They want to be heard. So anybody who, you know, and I've got phone numbers, you know, they're out there. They're willing to talk. If people listening in can get other reporters or whatever interested in talking to these guys, and just to keep disseminating this information. But sign the petition. It's at wearewideawake.org, the USS Liberty link. And check out the Vanunu Saga. Listen to Vanunu some videos. And remember his birthday, the 13th. He's Vanunu.com. And send him a birthday message. And buy the book, because he'll get the profits, and you'll get an interesting story. Well, there's no profits. I bought them. I self-printed them. I published them. It's on Kindle for $9.99. My first two books are on Kindle for 99 cents. the Venunu books $9.99, and I am the only source for the paper editions of the Venunu book. So once they're gone, first press editions, there won't be any more of those, but it's on Kindle.
And all of this can be found at
WeAreWideAwake.org
or
IreneFleming.org.
IreneFleming.org, yeah.
And you were great. Thank you.
So thank you for all of this information. I'm going to post your links and his on the Aramark If You're Radio page, but I on Facebook. But I'm going to be sending them around also.
Yeah, great. Yeah, you were fun to talk to, except, yeah, it was too comfortable. I forgot, you know, I'm talking on the radio. So, anyway, that was fun and good. And, yeah, we'll have to just be positive and, do what we can.
Yes, and I want to have you come and talk after the election. When you take yourself off Facebook, now you're not going to take yourself off your website.
No, they'll still be there, but you know, when you write a book, you really have got to just like zero in and I don't even know if I'll be doing articles. I don't know what the shape of those.
Yeah.
You know, the websites will be there. I just don't know how active I'll be on them, because I want to want to get that. And this time I'm going for an actual book deal because that's the only way to get it into the stores. You gotta go corporate.
Right.
That's it.
How long are you giving yourself for writing this book after they?
Well, I've been writing it. That's the beauty of having a website, because I've been writing this, especially the Venunu story. I've been writing that as it's been going, but it's editing it. It's getting it to be interesting. And as far as the Liberty story, what happened is I have all the interviews that are there on the website, but Ernie Gallo, one of the survivors, did a wonderful thing and sent me hard copies of probably about a dozen or more of the survivors who wrote. Some of them had them notarized. One was a letter that was written home like 2 days after, or the day after the attack. So I want to enshrine these as part of that book, a big part of the book, because it's a driving force in why I'm running. You know, liberty means freedom. You know, Venunu's not free. You know, these guys, we're not free. Americans, we're not free. And Big Brother Man is just getting out of control, and we the people, if we don't rise up, we are living George Orwell's nightmare, but I say there's time to wake up, and that's another reason why it's WeAreWideAwake.org.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And actually, I'm very optimistic. I think we're going to do it. But that doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
No, nothing easy is worthwhile, that's for sure. And I do, too, because that's one thing I came away with from the Campaign for Liberty people. These are all Ron Paul supporters, and the vast majority were young, 20-something-year-olds and high school kids reading, Ron Paul and Rothbard. I don't even know who the guy is, but these are young kids and they're politically inclined. I wasn't.
Oh,
at
I
that
know.
Age.
I'm so. Some of the youngsters are just amazing.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep. We just got to get out of the way and let them take over.
They're much more aware than I was at that age.
I think the sooner the better. We got to get all the gray hairs out of the way. Get them out.
We don't
get them
out of the
house.
Way, but we've got to get the others in. There's plenty of room.
Right. It's time. Plus, we're living, to 85, 89 is the average life expectancy.
Well, I'm going to make it way over 100.
Yeah, so you can have 3, 4, 5, 6 different careers in a lifetime.
Exactly. I know. Eileen, thank you so much.
Sure. Have a good weekend.
Fun. You too.
All right, you too. All right, night. Bye-bye.
Night.